This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Well, we start, as always, with the tenor saxophone of John Axon Ellis, who has a new CD out called By a Thread, for those who'd like to hear some jazz elsewhere than on Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program. Today we're talking with folks from AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort in, would you say Champaign-Urbana or the county or the mid part of the state, Jan?
Probably mostly Champaign-Urbana and outlying vicinity.
Jan Cruz is one of our four guests today in the studio. And before we introduce the other guests, Jan, tell us, what is AWARE?
Well, AWARE is a community group of local citizens who want to work for peace and justice in the community. I think most people were drawn to it shortly after 9/11, and from that point on, it has grown from a mostly student group to a group of a variety of ages, including high school all the way through my father, who's 80.
Really? Uh-huh. And Linda Weber, have you been with AWARE from its beginning, or have you joined more recently?
Probably just in the last 2 years. We moved down here 2 years ago from Chicago.
And what had you been doing in Chicago?
Similar things. They have peace and justice groups there, too, and working through the church.
What particular church was that?
That was Church of the Brethren.
Huh. That has a long history of being concerned with peace issues.
Right.
And Mort Brussel, tell us, how did you get involved in AWARE? Why did you join up?
Well, I really got interested in it at the onset of the Iraq War, before that, as it was threatening to become a war. And I just heard about the fact that there was this community group, and I decided that I wanted to be part of it.
Okay. And Carl Esterbrook, you're sharing that same microphone. Tell us about your involvement with AWARE.
Shortly after AWARE began, I was asked to do a brief news summary for the AWARE meeting every week. AWARE has met weekly really since its beginning. And a few minutes at the beginning of each meeting, at least when I remember to attend, I talk about the news of the week and what's going on in the global war on terrorism.
Now, where does AWARE meet weekly?
In the basement of the Independent Media Center in Urbana, the old post office.
I know when you began meeting, you met on Sunday afternoons at the University YMCA.
We did indeed.
And then you moved to IMC. And what time is it you meet?
5 o'clock every Sunday afternoon, 5 to 6:30. We try to observe the time boundaries pretty accurately, and it's an open meeting. People are invited to come and sit with us if they want to work on planning activities related to peace and justice.
Let's talk a little bit about the beginning of AWARE. Who started it?
Actually, I think it began from people associated with the School for Designing a Society, that they really called it together. They wanted to gather local folks who were working on peace and justice issues right after 9/11 and make this a sort of committee of committees. And AWARE has really continued in that fashion. Various working groups participate in the weekly meeting, but the actual activities of AWARE are carried on by these more or less independent groups.
Jan, tell us about the structure of this community group. Does it have a president, vice president? Are there elected officers? Is it all volunteer? How's it organized?
The organization is very unstructured. We don't really have a president or anyone specifically in charge. We trade off facilitating the meeting. It flows from one person willing to volunteer from week to week. Someone will take minutes on a voluntary basis, and I volunteer to be the treasurer, which is one of the few offices, but it is definitely not a position that it's open and shared organizational style.
And you take turns being the facilitator, the person who's keeping the meeting going and on track and mm-hmm. moving forward and so on.
Yes, we have an agenda, and we go through the agenda of the meeting, and we always leave a portion of the meeting open to new ideas and then reports from the working groups. And it flows from week to week. We ask for someone to volunteer, and someone usually steps forward and takes that position. But it's definitely not an organization with a hierarchy at all.
So no hierarchy. Does it operate by consensus, or do you take votes? Sometimes
consensus.
One, sometimes the other.
No, we rarely vote. It's generally by consensus, and unless somebody objects, then we backtrack.
Yeah, we have a rule which is rarely needed, which is if there is a contentious issue in which, there's a difference of opinion, then if it comes to that, then we require that 90% of the membership agree to a particular position.
So you don't require an absolute consensus. There is some way that the majority, 90% of the group, can move ahead if there's opposition on an issue.
That's correct.
And I think it's actually more a matter of the working groups going off to do their own activities. Since the programs are relatively independent, there's not too much of a problem of having a consensus of the group. If you're not interested in that particular activity, then you don't show up.
How many people are involved in all of the working groups that make up AWARE?
Well, it varies from week to week. Usually we have between, I would say, 20 and 30 people attending meetings, but the membership of AWARE is much larger than that. Anyone who is at all in agreement with some of the things that we do may show up only for that particular event. When we stand on One Main, for instance, on the first Saturday of each month from 2 to 4, there's folks that come, and that's the thing that they are most interested in, and so they may bypass the weekly meeting, but they know we will be there, and they're very interested in participating in that that particular event. So I would say our outreach into the community could be symbolic of 2003 in February, where we had 300 people lining Prospect Avenue and in opposition to the beginning of the war. So who knows? The numbers could be vast.
Yeah. Now, to be a member, do you just show up, or are there dues?
No dues.
Do you ask for contributions?
We pass around a bottle which people can contribute to during the meeting.
How big is the bottle?
It's a gallon.
And what was in that bottle before you started passing it around?
It's a plastic jar.
All right. How much – you have a treasury. How much money you got?
Isn't that secret?
It's not very big. It's a 2,000-something. I'm not sure of the exact amount.
And the funny thing is it's been 2,000-something for about 4 years,
yes,
I think.
It so. Very seldom fluctuates. We do some fundraisers, but the amount seems to stay about the same.
Okay, let's talk about this particular working group that all four of you are involved in and that we advertised on the radio that we'd be talking about today. I like always eventually to get around to the topic. You call yourself the Church Presence Working Group, and when I was talking with you about being on this program, I was asking before we started if you're limited just to churches or also synagogues, temples, mosques, whatever, and you said you started with churches about a year ago. Who wants to tell me why?
Well, I could maybe address
sure.
that.
Thank you, Jan.
My husband and I were driving near Meadowbrook Park, and we looked over in front of a church there on the corner of Windsor and Vine, and we saw a lone man standing in front of a church with a sign, and we weren't sure what he might be about. So we went over and asked him, and his sign said, "Say no to war," and on the other side it said, "Impeach Bush." and we were curious. He was speaking with a parking lot attendant there, what he was doing, and his response was that he wanted to make the rounds of all the churches because he felt that of all places, churches should be speaking out in opposition to what he saw as an illegal war, an occupation, and torture. And this was early last fall that we spotted him. And so we got the idea to bring to AWARE the possibility of doing something similar in the community, because as we discussed it, we realized that many of us in the group come from a religious background. Many of us do not. We have a variety of people in the group who may or may not attend a church service. They may be non-believers. But we all agreed that during this coming season of Advent, it would be important to address the issue of peace on earth.
And this was a year ago.
Mm-hmm, a year ago. And so then in November, we began the program of the church presence. And we really didn't want it to be a protest. We wanted it to be a presence in front of various churches in the community.
I like the idea that we began, too, in response to the voice of one crying in the wilderness, too.
Mm-hmm. John the Baptist, come again. Now, what... Is this man now part of AWARE, or is this person a prefer to work alone?
Prophets are unclubbable.
He has attended another AWARE event. He does prefer to work alone, but he did come to a counter-recruiting event we held in front of Memorial Stadium because he was very adamant that he was a former person in the military and that he felt that that was an issue that he also wanted to address, but he is not currently an active member.
Okay. Now, you talked about the different ages of people in AWARE, and you said it sort of began as a student group. So there were university students who responded most quickly to some of the early activities of AWARE?
Well, I think Carl mentioned School for Designing Society and also young folks in the college community.
Uh-huh.
But I think some of those have, you know, gone on to their careers and professions.
Sure.
And it's evolved over the course of the time.
And, of course, all of us are 5 years older, too, so it's been that long.
Yeah,
well, we have high school students there now, though.
As well. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about the church presence working group's activities. Tell us what you do. Yeah, Mort.
Well, the church presence means that we decided that we would like to address, in some sense, the conscience of some of the local churches by being outside on Sundays and perhaps passing out pamphlets if it were possible to enter into a discussion with people going to church or coming back from church. And also we would have, we had some posters which we would place in the public spaces near the churches to maybe prick the conscience of the congregation as they were entering or leaving. That's mostly what was involved. We also were interested, if possible, to dialogue with the pastors or ministers of the church if they were interested in doing that and establishing a kind of relationship there.
Linda, let me move to you. You identified yourself earlier as Church of the Brethren.
Right.
Has the Church of the Brethren, has that denomination, has that organization taken a formal stand during the war or at the beginning of the Iraq War?
I think most of the churches nationally have taken formal stands.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the Brethren, the Quakers, and the Mennonites are the historic peace churches, and they take generally stronger or at least more vocal stands against the war.
Okay. How do you pick what church to go to? If you already know that those churches are against the war, do you go there or do you make it a point not to go there? You don't need to go there.
Right. We don't really need to go there, so we've chosen churches that other churches, we feel that all the churches basically need to speak out against killing, and so we are we go to different churches.
I think it comes close to casting lots, you know, whichever comes up.
I think we've also decided to go to churches which have large congregations.
Yes,
because
sure.
We wanted to spread the word amongst as many people
have a big
clearly
impact.
As possible in, right. in that case.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate and say, let's say I'm a pastor of a fairly large church, and I drive to my church that morning, and I see you all assembled out in front. Should I be scared? Are you going to disrupt the sermon I've carefully written?
Not disrupt. I mean, I think Jen made the point earlier that these presences, and the word was fairly carefully chosen, I think, are not protests exactly. They are, as Mort was saying, a way to sort of conscientiousize the people on this particular issue. We think we find a willing group here, perhaps, and even, I think, more importantly, it's one of the few places where we can count on finding a fair number of our fellow citizens on a regular schedule.
Now, you talked about putting up posters and passing out leaflets and talking with people who are willing to talk to you. Do you also go into the church?
If invited.
If invited. So if someone said, gee, we'd like to hear what you have to say, we'd like to talk with you, you're happy to go in and have a discussion in a group or...
We'd be delighted.
Uh-huh. Has that happened?
And we've proposed it.
Has that happened?
Rarely, and only informally.
Okay, all right.
They have brought us out donuts and
yes.
coffee
all right. That's
outside.
Nice. Okay. All right, let me continue my devil's advocacy. What if I'm a member of a church, like say, the Presbyterian Church or the Catholic Church that has a mixed bag of people in it, some of whom might be pacifists who are against all wars, some who might be just war people who think that there are some wars that could be wars of defense and if fought under certain conditions might be acceptable as an ethical response to a tyrant, for example, or someone who's needs to be overthrown, perhaps, by their own people. Do you enter into the conversation about that, or do you have to sort of be a pacifist to be pure?
I have a couple of thoughts on that. At the beginning of the Iraq War, you know, I have a list of the various churches, the leaders of various churches, who originally came out against the war. Uh-huh. But for me, there's always been a certain dissonance in that local parishes have not taken up the activism which was possibly expressed by their leaders.
By their national leaders.
By their national
or
leaders.
International
and that was
leaders,
so. Disturbing I to see. Us. And we would have liked to have addressed that particular issue. The other thing is, we were interested in dialoguing with those who might, you know, contest our beliefs about
yes.
the justice of the war. So we wanted to get into a dialogue with those people who, you know, were not totally in agreement with us. That's part of the issue,
okay.
I think.
Let me take just a quick moment, since we're about 20 minutes into our program, and reintroduce our guests, because we may have listeners who've joined us late. We're talking with members of AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort in Champaign-Urbana. We're talking with Carl Estabrook, Mort Brussel, Linda Weber, and Jan Cruz, all of whom are either equally president of the organization or equally followers. Excuse me. Listeners are encouraged to give us a call and join in this conversation, particularly since I'm starting to cough and someone else may have to ask the questions. Call us in Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Carl, tell us a little bit about your particular religious background and its relation to these issues.
Sure. One thing, Steve, does to start with, you mentioned a moment ago whether members of AWARE thought, or the Church Presence Group of AWARE thought one needed to be pacifist to be pure. There certainly are pacifists in AWARE. There are also other people in AWARE who are specifically not pacifists, who hold to the traditional just war theory. I'd put myself there, for example. There are other members of AWARE, which is not, after all, a religious group in general, who don't have a religious take on this war at all. They simply object to it on grounds of conscience and politics. So in that sense, the AWARE approaches the Church Presence Program from a variety of positions within the organization itself. I like to think of myself as in communion with the Bishop of Rome. I sometimes wonder what he thinks about that. But in any case, I consider myself a traditional Catholic in that regard, that the just war theology is a reasonable way to talk about Christianity and politics, and that it seems to me patently obvious that the war in Iraq meets practically none of the traditional criteria of a just war. It is on its face an unjust war.
Tell us what some of those criteria are.
Primarily, that the that a war to be just has to accomplish more good than evil, that it has to be a last resort, that it has to represent an authentic decision by a political group, that is, it has to be declared by a correct authority, and so forth. All of these things, list of requirements grew up over almost the entire history of Christianity because it was clear that the use of violence was an exception. Christian was clearly called upon to be nonviolent, but it was thought there might be some circumstances in which violence was unavoidable. What were those circumstances? And the set of requirements that have been associated with the notion of the just war are an attempt to say what those requirements are. And if
one
we apply...
of them is that noncombatants are to be spared. For...
Exactly. And in fact, since it is a matter of some 1,500 years of discussion, there are a variety of ways of looking at it, but they're principally ways of describing very rare circumstances where an organized force and violence can be employed. And they, as I say, I think anybody who takes that tradition seriously sees that the present war doesn't fit the criteria.
Just to give listeners a sense of the variety of folks within AWARE, Jan, do you or Mort willing to talk about your religious tradition, if any?
Well, I can talk about it in a certain
sense. We like to speak of Mort as the minister of religion here precisely because he isn't.
Yeah, in a certain sense that I'm not a person that has been brought up in any religious tradition.
Sure.
So some people would call me a secular humanist. Others would call me an atheist. I don't care what they call me, but... I feel that I have a conscience. I've been outraged by some of the things that have happened in the last years, not only the war, but the things that are associated with the war, torture, deception in the giving the reasons for going to the war, etc. And so I think I'm part of a large group of people, some of whom are religious and some who are not religious.
We have a caller who wants to join the discussion. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Just using some of the past discussion of pacifism as a segue, I was interested if you could talk about some of the tactics that you use in terms of protesting the war, and if your group is in favor of diversity of tactics, if you use direct action, or if you support that. If you could speak to that, please.
Thank you for the question. Who would like to respond? Jan?
The tactics that we use during Church Presence is, to begin with, we thought we would not call the churches ahead of time. We didn't want to put the pastor in a position of having to decide whether he was going, how he was going to share the information with his congregation. We always call the police ahead of time so that they're aware that we will be there and that we have no intention of breaking any laws in the carrying out of our church presence. The direct action we do is we remain on public property. We don't enter the church grounds. We try to have signs and banners and flyers to share if people are interested in taking them. After we did a presence or two, we had a roundtable discussion at the Catholic Worker House, and through that discussion, it came out that the folks there representing Mennonites and Quakers and Catholic Workers thought that we might do better to let the pastors know ahead of time that we were coming. And from that point on, we started sharing our intentions with the churches before we arrived. And some of them wanted to enter into dialogue with us before we did it, before we came. We always shared with them that we were not protesting. We were there to spark dialogue, to encourage discussion among them and those of us outside, and also within their church regarding this issue. As far as direct action, we directly, plan to go and do it, but we don't really plan to do any civil disobedience in the process.
Caller, did you want to follow up with another question?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Well, let me follow up just a little bit. Why be so polite? People's lives are
good questions. That's a very good question, and I'm not sure we have an answer for it yet. It's just that what has been available to us so far has not led us to think that civil disobedience is the appropriate tactic at the moment. It could, but we've just not got there yet.
In past decades, anti-war movements in this country and abroad have been organized on a much larger scale, and the local groups like AWARE have tied in with others. Do you do that?
You want to talk about UFPJ?
Yeah, we are a member of the United for Peace and Justice nationally, and then there's the Illinois Conference for Peace and Justice as well, and we belong, we're associated with both of those organizations. We get information from them. We tell them what activities we're doing, et cetera.
Some people say that one reason college students have not taken the lead on anti-war resistance and efforts is simply because there no longer is a draft. Do you think that's true? Linda, you're shaking your head no.
Well, I don't think so. No, I don't think. Actually, I wonder how much the young people have thought of the draft. They're not familiar with it, and I just see it as kind of a non-issue. I wanted to respond just a little bit to the question about why we're so polite.
Sure.
Partly, we're there not as enemies. We're there as friends, and hopefully the people in the church also feel, or at least a lot of them feel the way we do, that war is not right, or this particular war at least is certainly not a good thing. And so we're there just basically to say, here we are, this is what we believe, and hopefully to spark interest with the people there. We're not there to protest what they've done or not done. We're there mostly as a reaching out to the people in the church.
Now, since AWARE doesn't have any creed or religious requirements, people like Mort, who you identify yourself as a secular humorist, perhaps a atheist, agnostic, whatever. Why pick on Christians? Or why pick on religious people? Why not go to bars? Why not go to...
Oh, well, that's an easy
one.
We
do that too, yeah.
That's an easy one to answer, in fact, because as someone who doesn't belong to a religious tradition, we often hear that really the moral basis of our society comes from religion and the churches. So it seemed natural to challenge the churches just on this particular issue and to, as I said before, to prick their conscience to act on the basis of what their prophets or Jesus Christ, whomever you wish to cite, has said.
We have another caller waiting, again on local line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
I was very much against the Iraq War in the beginning. I mean, I'm still not crazy about it, But I guess I've gotten to the point where I'm not sure what the solution is, because it seems like pulling out wouldn't necessarily make things better now. I mean, obviously we can't go back in time and undo it. I guess I'm curious to know what your guests think would be the solution now, and if they're trying to convey that to the people that they talk to in their discussions in front of churches, and what kind of thoughts they get. I'm particularly interested in what Mr. Estabrook has to say on this topic, because I know that he's done a lot of reading about this and knows a lot. So I will hang up and listen offline.
Thank you very much.
Flattery will get you anywhere you want to go. You know, I'll take any place. No, I think there's a common view amongst people in groups like ours that the U.S. is committing a great crime and should stop doing it, and that is the starting point for any discussion of what the particular actions, what the particular policy of the United States should be. I do get a bit surprised when I hear this notion from people who have various views about the war that, well, the war may have been a mistake, but we can't simply pull out now because there'd be chaos. I mean, first of all, I'm not quite sure what you describe the present situation as other than chaos. But more importantly, I'm wondering what, say, a thoughtful German would have said in 1943, and whether we would have believed him if he had said, well, of course, we shouldn't have invaded France and we shouldn't have occupied France, but we can't just pull out now because there'd be chaos. I mean, if we took him seriously at all, we'd say that's, you know, an indefensible position. You should simply get your army out of the country where it doesn't belong. And that's the way I feel about Iraq.
Maybe I can add something to that.
Yes, Mort.
There have been polls of the Iraqis, and they have said to, in their majority, that they want American troops out. So they evidently have enough faith in their own abilities to somehow make things better than they are now, where American troops are there. Most people, I think, agree that the American presence there is a stimulus to the violence, or a partial stimulus to the violence. There are many ingredients at the present time to the violence, but certainly our presence there is an additional ingredient to the violence there. And that's why I think we feel that the quicker the American troops withdraw, probably the better for international humanity as well as the people in Iraq it is.
Some would say that the majority of Iraqis might want Americans out, but there are certain minorities that would suffer if that were to happen. Do you give any credence to that?
Well, one of the minorities that would suffer would be the puppet government that we've established in Baghdad, because those people whose writ doesn't run beyond Baghdad itself would have to get out in a hurry in order to save their own skins.
But also the Kurds.
Well, the Kurds are a different situation. I mean, the Kurds have had a sort of general American patronage for a long time. When the U.S. was bombing Iraq during the days of Saddam Hussein, long before this war started, the Kurds, of course, were exempt. They were the U.S. was using them as a safe area within Iraq. The relationship of the U.S. and Iraq didn't begin in March of 2003, of course. I mean, it's still the case the Clinton administration is probably responsible for more deaths in Iraq, even if you accept what seems to be the accurate figures that the current war has killed 500,000 Iraqis. So the depredations visited upon Iraq by recent American administrations, both Republican and Democrat, are very serious, and we should stop doing that. That some people who have thrown their lot in with the Americans may indeed have to make some arrangements quickly is probably true, but that's happening anyhow. I'm told that a good number of the members of the previous governments, such as Mr. Alawi's government, have used the money that they've made, it turns out to be very lucrative to be in the puppet government, to buy houses in London. And a lot of these folks are out of Iraq. There are two types of people leaving Iraq, folks who work for the Americans and the poorest.
We're about halfway through our program. Let me introduce our guests again. Carl Estabrook, who was just speaking, Mort Brussell, Linda Weber, and Jan Cruz, all from AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort in Champaign-Urbana. We have two callers waiting on our local lines. I want to get to them in just a second. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs on Sunday evenings here on WILL AM 580. a radio service of the College of Communications here at the University of Illinois. Our program is live. It goes from 5 to 6 every Sunday. Next week, our guest will be representatives from the Fellowship of Catholic University Students called FOCUS. Sally Weeks will be our guest for the last Sunday in December. She's a Baha'i who will be traveling to Haifa in Israel and Palestine. Our topic will be Peace on Earth for that last Sunday program for this year. Support for Keeping the Faith programs comes from the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious organization on the University of Illinois campus. It was founded just 6 years after the university began. Since that time, with its Christian origin, it's opened itself to people of other faiths and even people who are not religious. And many students and others are involved in Y programs, working on social action issues. And we have many forums and discussions. And we also have students who go out and do tutoring and community service. And we're very proud of the leadership skills they develop in that process. Well, let's get to some of our other callers who are waiting. If others would like to join the queue to join this discussion, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere, including on the Internet. You may punch in 1-800-222-9455 for a toll-free call. Let's go to line number one. Line one, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello. Someone mentioned that they talk to the ministers before they become a presence at the church. And I wondered if they've ever considered talking to those ministers and trying to set up a discussion session inside the church, you know, as part of the church. A lot of churches have discussion groups already of various kinds, and they may be interested. So I just wondered if they'd considered that.
Thanks for the question.
All right, I'll hang up and listen.
Great.
Yes, we have considered that, and we've actually held some dialogues with some of the churches in the community. We found that at one church in particular where we were invited back, as long as the discussion was, in their opinion, not going to be divisive, which meant folks that may have a different opinion than what we brought forth, they really didn't want to have anything discussed that could cause people to have of different opinions for that to become apparent. We found that somewhat troubling. Because a person in our group actually was a member of that church and was longing to act on her faith and bring forth a small discussion group regarding issues of war and torture. And it was coming from someone from within the church, the need for this dialogue. So we have tried that approach. Personally, for myself, having been raised in a particular faith, and having become frustrated with the lack of taking a stand regarding the current situation in foreign policy, my husband and I approached a congregation when we saw the sign out front that told us to support the troops and to pray for the president. We went in and began a dialogue with him, and it was very frustrating to hear him say that what we were bringing forth didn't match up with the dogma and the teachings of the particular faith. And when we told him we were baptized, confirmed, attended parochial college, and taught in the school system of this particular faith, that was disheartening, to say the least. So our attempts at dialogue, we are still hopeful, but we have not exactly struck upon an approach yet that has brought us forth with a really good way of continuing that dialogue.
Thank you, Jan. Let's go to another caller on line number two, local line two. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi. In my discussions with friends, they agree very much that the war is wrong, that many of the things that are happening, the violent things, you know, overseas torture camps and things like that are wrong. A lot of people I talk to are like this, but they seem afraid. I really think that afraid of what other people will think, afraid of being called unpatriotic. And I feel that there must be some way to energize these people, to help them to become more outspoken about that. And yet I feel certain that if one of their churches were one of yours that you targeted, they would shy away from any contact with your group. And I wondered if you've thought about this and if you've thought about any way of reaching these kind of people, because there's so many of them.
Linda, do you have a thought in response to that?
Well, the main thing is that's what the whole church presence is about, is trying to reach people that, like someone said earlier, to prick their conscience or just to dialogue or to meet with pastors or meet with groups in the church. That's what we want.
But these people, which would really be maybe even opposed to that, and certainly would not want to have any contact with you. And what I'm saying, is there anything in addition to that that you have thought of as a way to meet this silent group?
Mort Brussel, go ahead.
Just to clarify, why do you think they would not like to have any contact with us?
I think they would find it, they would worry about what people thought, and maybe they would be like that person who thought it would be divisive in their church. And maybe even though you are peacefully assembling, they would associate it with the kinds of things that we saw here in town during the Vietnam War, which became quite violent. I think a group of people against anything all of a sudden kind of puts up barriers for people. And one-on-one, people seem to be okay.
Thank you for that question. Let's let Carl Esterbrook respond.
I think the situation you're describing here, in a sense, is a an indication of the success of pro-government propaganda going back to the Vietnam War. We've had the experience in these demonstrations of people coming to us and saying, I agree with you all, but I really don't think too many other people in my church would, and then are surprised to find that a good number do. We have been the victims of an ideological manipulation, literally for a generation, that has forced us to forget that by the end of the Vietnam War, 3/4 of Americans thought that the Vietnam War was not just a mistake, that it was a crime, that it was morally wrong that the U.S. had done what it had to Vietnam. The most recent polls now tell us that approaching 2/3 of Americans think that the Iraq War is wrong. So this notion that those protesting the war represent a minority is, first of all, false, and secondly, a sort of successful result of convincing people that this really is a minority view. It's not.
We have two other callers waiting. Let's go to line number 3, a local line number 3, but let me quickly say that if listeners have tuned in late to this program and would like to hear the start of it, that's possible on the WILL website. You may go to will.uiuc.edu in about a week or so, and this program will be archived, and you can hear the program in its entirety on your computer. But line number 3, go ahead, please.
Hi there. How are you, Steve? You sound a little stiffly still.
I'm afraid I still have a cold.
Yeah. Anyhow, my draft number was 2 during the Vietnam era, and I remember well, but I think it's going to come back. We're running out of minions to march around and do things and so on and so forth. And also, the other thing that I heard a couple days ago is that it's not a civil war if not every faction of the country is involved. And I remember, and I think it was on NPR, that people were joking that New Hampshire was not involved when we were in a civil war and so forth. So I'm just wondering how your guests might comment on such things, and what do we do? I'm not sure that we can just pull out and leave. And is the suggestion with the report and so forth realistic, and will our president listen to it? I guess I'll hang up and I'll listen to your response.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Jan Cruz.
Well, the caller was saying, what can we do or what should we do? And I'm a retired first grade school teacher. And when I retired, I decided my time was going to be spent doing what I could do. And so my thinking is you find a project, and I found Aware, and you do what you can in the time and that you have available to you. And church presence strikes me as something that I feel passionate about. I feel it's important. There are other working groups in Aware, but there's a lot of different ways in the community that you can get involved to do something about educating each other and finding ways to become informed myself, and then taking it from there and doing what you can wherever you find yourself.
We have about another 12 minutes on this program. Let me repeat the phone numbers, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana to join the conversation, 333-WILL. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. We have a caller waiting online. Mort, go ahead. You want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to address the last question of the caller. About what to do is a difficult question. I would suggest to the caller that he just educate himself as much as possible from the different points of view that are coming from Iraq and from this country and from critics and from others in order to make up his mind on that. I think I've already stated our general consensus is that we are doing no good there. We would do good, I feel, if we got out of Iraq and at the same time we offered to the Iraqi people and the Iraqi nation construction funds and reparations for all the damage that has been done to their country. I think that would be a kind of balm which could smooth things down in that country. I'm not sure of that, of course. I don't think anybody can be sure of anything in this particular thing, but that's my conviction.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with members of the Church Presence Working Group of AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort in Champaign-Urbana that meets weekly from 5 to 6:30 at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana at the post office basement. That's at the south end of Broadway, isn't it? Broadway and
Elm Street.
Great. And it's open to the public Sunday evenings from 5 to 6:30.
It's going on right now.
You're missing it. We have another caller, please, on line number one. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I'm just going to make a comment about a few different areas. What's happened is that in terms of the program, I was in my car. I heard part of the program, then I had to get gas, and then I was back in my car, and finally I'm home. The war they project, you know, as it continues on, it'll be $1 trillion. And then another trillion for the people that are coming home in terms of the military and all that kind of stuff, you know, in terms of hospitals and all that kind of stuff. I mean, such a thing in terms of social justice. I mean, the other one is that in Vietnam we had the domino theory, which you found out didn't exist, I guess, and we're led along for quite a while. Fallujah is, we could actually have war crimes there, from my understanding. We just sort of leveled that place. The other one is that what's interesting, I heard that comment in terms of religion, why the churches should be involved. Even the evangelicals now are talking about, global warming, that this is an issue. So I think, but anyway, in terms of any of these things that you wanted to comment on.
Appreciate the comment. Thank you for listening and sharing with us.
One point about this, Steve, I think most of us in AWARE think that one of our major tasks is to talk to our fellow citizens about what's really going on in this war. We're in the midst of a remarkable miasma misrepresentation of what this war is about.
What's a miasma?
Well, in this case, I'm thinking of the fog of information that we work in. We think we're getting a good account of what's going on in the war, but I don't think we are. And one of the first tasks that AWARE wants to encourage is a sort of intellectual self-defense over against the media construction of this war. Let's break through it and see what really is going on here. And I'd like to take just one example. We've talked to... perhaps as a comment on our ages, of parallels between Vietnam and Iraq. But there are many ways in which the war in Vietnam and the war in Iraq are not alike at all. The U.S. could withdraw from Vietnam without any sort of serious loss from the point of view of American foreign policy as a whole. There wasn't anything we really needed in Vietnam. Vietnam was, as the caller just referred to a moment ago, a result of notions of the domino theory. It was a demonstration war. We wanted to show people what they could and couldn't do around the world. Iraq's much different. Iraq has some of the major energy resources of the world, and it's been the cornerstone of American foreign policy since the Second World War that the U.S. insists upon controlling world energy resources. We're not leaving Iraq. The Iraq Study Group is not proposing we leave Iraq. Barack Obama is not proposing we leave Iraq, and neither is the Republican administration. And for that reason, we have to wipe away some of that fog about what the U.S. is really doing and talk about the real policies the U.S. is following because those are the ones that have to be challenged.
Down to our last 5 minutes, but we could slip in another call or two, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Linda, it looked like you wanted to add something to that last comment.
Well, no, I was going back a little further. The woman who claimed that she would be considered unpatriotic, I've heard that so many times, and that goes back, my thinking on that goes back to World War II when Goebbels of Nazi Germany, his whole idea of propaganda was to propagandize the nation, and anyone that disagreed would be branded unpatriotic. And that's pretty much what's happened here. If you disagree with the federal government or any of the war people, then somehow you are unpatriotic. I just don't buy that.
Another caller on line number one. Go ahead.
Yes. I was thinking about weapons of mass destruction, but I think it should be called weapons of mass deception. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll hang up and listen to the caller's response. Thank you.
What do you think of the notion that if there had been weapons of mass destruction in the hands of Saddam Hussein, then it would have been a legitimate effort to take him out of power?
I can make a comment upon that. The countries that have weapons of mass destruction at the present time, the foremost country is the United States, which harbors those weapons. Now, every country wants to defend itself. What's happened as a result of the foreign policy of our current administration is clearly that those countries which have a nuclear deterrent, like a weapon of mass destruction, seems to be relatively safe from American onslaught, while those that are not are at our mercy. Now, if Iraq had weapon of mass destruction, I don't think that's an excuse for going in unless we feel directly threatened. They didn't have, in addition to weapons of mass destruction, they didn't have the means to inflict damage upon the United States. So even if they had weapons of mass destruction, and even if what the administration said, it would be a potential threat in the future, I think, you know, you can't act on that basis. That would lead to world anarchy.
These days, when things like anthrax can be brought across borders fairly easily, when there are other biological weapons that could be used against any population, like happened in the subways of Paris, when even atomic bombs seemingly are now the size of a suitcase, do you feel that people who are afraid of the United States being attacked by terrorists using those kind of methods feel that it's legitimate to show power such as has been done in Iraq?
Well, the whole world knows we have them and that we have thousands of them. And I just don't think, yes, but that's terrorism, and we aren't really doing anything about terrorism itself.
No connection between terrorism and Iraq as far as anybody knows.
Not as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And also, as you pose the problem, Steve, I mean, the old answer, it's worse than a crime, it's a blunder, in the sense that what the U.S. is doing in Iraq would not forestall any of the sorts of terrorism that you're talking about. In fact, we've seen that, as the American intelligence agency said before the war, it's done just the opposite. It's encouraged this sort of terrorism around the world. And so American policy is directly counterproductive in this regard. But it's not just an accident. It's not because it's stupid. It's because it's a lie. That is, the policy is not really based upon trying to stop terrorism. The policy is based on the long-term American foreign policy goals, and terrorism is being used as an excuse.
Right.
On Keeping the Faith this week, we've had four guests from AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort in Champaign-Urbana that meets weekly from 5 to 6:30. At the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. Is there a phone number that people could call, any of you or somewhere else, for more information about AWARE, or is it best just to show up for a meeting?
Show up for a meeting, and there is a website.
What's the website?
We keep trying to put – we have actually a couple because there are several working groups. But, yeah, your suggestion is best, Steve. Show up for a meeting. We'd be happy to see you.
One more thing. We do have a listserv. We do have an email communication service. So if people are interested in
that, they show up, they can get on the listserv.
They can get on the listserv.
Great. Well, we've been listening to Jan Cruz, Linda Weber, Mort Brussel, and Carl Esterbrook from AWARE. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. The University Y, which is our main sponsor, survives because of people's charitable gifts, including the gifts of vehicles. If you have a car, a pickup truck, even a motorcycle or a boat, and would like to donate it to a charity here in Champaign-Urbana before the end of the year and be able to get a tax deduction, do give me a call. Steve Shoemaker at the University Y, that's 337-1500, 337-1500. We're motivated to sell those vehicles for a good price. That helps the Y, and it also helps you with a tax deduction. Next week on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be students from FOCUS, F-O-C-U-S, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. Later in December, Sally Weeks, a Baha'i who will be traveling to Haifa in Israel, in Palestine, will be our guest. We'll be talking about peace on earth. That's coming up the last Sunday, December 31st of this year. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Polls show that nearly half of all Americans believe the biblical story of creation. Only a quarter accept evolution. The philosopher Daniel Dennett thinks we need to break the spell of religion, but creationist Paul Nelson says evolution simply can't explain certain mysteries. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, it's Debating Darwin. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana. Monday morning on Focus 580, we'll be doing our regular Talk to the Family Doctor program with Dr. Jeff Swearingen, family practice physician from Carl Clinic in Urbana. He stops by every other month to respond to your health questions. We do these shows to give you a place to start and add to your base of knowledge about health. Dr. Swearingen works with people of all ages in his practice, so if you have a question for yourself or someone in your family, your call will be welcome. I'm David Inge, the host for the show. It's Focus 580, Monday morning at 11 here on WILL Urbana.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the upper 40s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, a chance of showers in the evening, then showers likely after midnight, the low in the lower 40s with south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.